It's 3:10. Iari is in the game. Spillo's here. Yiska, as per usual. Eric in the booth. We're here to break down a preview. Dabbling in some divination for all the Baldur's Gate nerds out there. Hello, Baldur's Gate community. I am one of you. We're here. We're going to try to figure out what this playoff meta looks like. Yiska spoke to some insiders. We've got some juice there. We've got one of the biggest brains outside of the Overwatch League, creating content, figuring stuff out. So we'll have some threads for you to pull on as we get into these final few weeks. And obviously Contenders is coming up too. Yiska kind of pointed me in that direction in the pre-show discussion. So there's definitely, you know, some evidence to support a lot of these claims coming up. So, but Spillo, how are things? How are you? Are we excited about Iari?
Yeah, I mean, doing good. All things are going well. Appreciate it. I'm definitely excited for Iari. I think word on the street is this: we've got another 2022 Stage 2 meta potentially coming out. You know, the double flux support, Doom, Winston, some teams have been Rein, D.Va. Might be the most diverse meta that we had since then. And I think the other thing, too, is that we actually have a hero that's really, really fun to watch.
Yeah.
So Iari does have a high pick rate. People are going to still watch, right? It's going to be a lot more fun to watch than Sombra.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yiska, I know you got just producing all kinds of content. How are things? Are we excited?
Pretty good. Not going to lie, the first time I asked what is currently being played, the first guy came back and said, like, all the builders are meta. Like, Iari.
Oh, no, like, not the builders.
Sim Torps. Like, being played in one comp is just, oh my god, I was...
That takes you back, man. If this is the end of things, there's nothing that would make me smile more than, like, reminiscing about, like, good old Torb Sim, like, back when Internet Hulk was still, you know, championing the triple shield cookies combo. Like, that just feels like 2015, 2016. It's just...
They have a shield generator. They have a shield generator.
Oh, shield generator. I had to explain that to my wife. She didn't even remember that. And
really?
I remember, you guys remember the Junkrat voice line, I have a feeling they have a shield generator. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whoa, like it's like the, what's his name in Ratatouille, the flashback. I'm like, oh my gosh, I haven't had that go through my brain in like 4.5 years. Holy crap.
Core memory unlocked.
What a goofy ultimate. I mean, it's teleporter too. Like, what on earth was that?
You had two of them. You could like swap between, you could choose your ult. And it was like, why is this the only hero in the game that has two all whatever. Anyways, it is having, I think that kind of sets the stage or sets the tone for like how sandboxy the meta feels right now, with like a brand new hero in Iari being super fun, kind of beautifully simple. I'm kind of still gonna try to force that home, just like super super fun, very core to like an FPS game. And yeah, if builders are like being at least tested in like scrims past like day one scrims, like stuff, we might be seeing some wacky stuff. It's I'm genuinely kind of jazzed to see what all kind of comes from this. I'm very looking forward to these last few weeks. I know we're getting map changes, all kinds of stuff, but before we jump into it too deep, we do have to thank the Patreon producers who make the show possible. So episode 3:10 is brought to you by our lovely helpers, producers, patrons. Patron Saints, maybe. Battle Crab, Refine Bean, Bronze Bob, Buhau, Picasso, Lulshin, Porkchop, Sammy, Rexane, Follow Melon, Sugar High, and our YouTube members, Blave Bliss, IMDRW, Brother Adam L, Ice MJL, Firearm at 6, and AK. Spillo, talk to me, sweet, about Iari and how cool she is and how much fun she is to play.
I think she's a new type of hero. I was thinking about this actually last night. I think like when we shifted, I've talked a lot about on my content about how like the shift to Overwatch 2 is a shift towards hybrid, right? Everything is hybrid. Rein has more mobility. Winston more range. Bastion has more. I mean, for crying out loud, Bastion now has mobility. Like, how crazy is that, right?
Yeah.
So everyone's kind of like, without vanilla, every hero. Every hero has strengths and weaknesses, but they have more flexibility within those strengths and weaknesses. And I think you see that with, you know, the Sojourn. You see that with the Queen. You've seen that with Ramattra, a Brawl Tank with a little poke. And, you know, you've got a Sojourn, a spam hero, but also a dive hero. And then Life Weaver happened, and nobody really knew where to put him in a bad way. But then Iari is like the light side version of Life Weaver, where, again, it's like, what is this hero? She has like brawl aspects with her heal beam, like obviously very, very limited with what she can do with that. And then she has like spam aspects with her gun. She has anti-dive slash dive aspects with her mobility. But then her heal turret is like anti-dive. It's like she doesn't really fit any of the archetypes. And we've not really seen a hero quite like that before.
Yeah.
And so what it means is that, like, when you have a brand new hero, usually what happens is they come with baggage. So, like, Junker Queen's meta. Okay, you need a Lucio, right? She's a brawl tank. She's got some aspects that are spammy, but she's a brawl tank, right? So you need a Lucio with her. But Iari, what synergizes with Iari? What counters Iari? The answer is yes, everything, and no, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's there's aspects of her kit that fit with other things and don't fit with other things. So, I don't know. I honestly think, like, anybody who thinks that they've solved Iari about how to counter or how to play what synergizes best with her, you're kidding yourselves. I think it's just going to be a lot of different reads happening at the same time. And I don't know that ever we're going to find out one niche where she fits.
Yeah, I think like it's probably not a hero that will be countered. It's just, like if you tune her numbers, are they, her numbers always going to carry her? Because the rest she brings to the table, it's not that, like, she doesn't have the anti-nade that decides fights, right? Like, you gotta put that damage out. The only thing is really the ultimate power play, which, you know, is an ultimate that basically went, how do we get support players to also have play of the games? That's how. And, I think that's always going to internally be the question for her. It's like, are her numbers good enough to justify bringing her when she otherwise doesn't bring too much in terms of the support label to the table, right?
It's like Lifeweaver, right? Like, because Lifeweaver, again, is not a hero that, like, obviously synergizes with anybody, right? He has aspects like the pull works good with aggressive tanks, but the heal works really well with aggressive DPS, like dive DPS. The ability to track and heal through walls is really helpful. Pedal is good for immobile people. The Life Rip can be used as an anti-peel. But again, like, what kind of a support is Life Weaver? Brawl, dive, spam? None of them. It doesn't fit in any of them. So, but Iari is like that, but in a good way, to where not just the numbers are big enough, because Life Weaver's numbers have continually climbed, but she feels more enjoyable and more proactive with what she can actually do.
Yeah, she fits kind of a... I think you said it really beautifully that, like, they're both... They're opposite poles of, like, this Overwatch spectrum. If everybody was kind of, like, on this line, both of them on release were just so opposite, where one is like, wow, this is really interesting to think about. I don't know what I'm going to do with you, and I know exactly what I'm going to do with you. I'm going to shoot people in the head. I'm going to heal people and put down my turret. I'm going to jump around. It's going to be fun. Like, you couldn't have two more different heroes, and I think the reception around it is very, like, matching, where it's like, Lifeweaver was kind of, you know, duddy on release, where I was like, okay, this could be interesting in like 10 years when, you know, the game gets to like a 20xx, you know, where we're, you know, fighting for port priority on who, you know, on who gets host or whatever. And Iari's just like, yeah, I shoot people and I heal people, and, you know, sometimes I ult. Well, crazy, weird. It's simple, and it works,
right? But, and the synergy, like, is like, feel fun.
Yeah.
Like, the synergies feel fun. Like, you know, it feels good to do a lot of healing to somebody in a brief period of time. It feels good to, you know, obviously the proactivity with the shot, and the mobility feels amazing too. So,
yeah, no, really well designed. I think hats off to Team 4.
Do you think there's a world where you get pissed off enough, I don't know, by the healing turret eventually, where the notion will just flip and we'll say, okay, this is so annoying. Like, she shouldn't do all of the things and...
Oh, yeah, exactly. Right when the honeymoon phase ends, everybody's going to be, like, up in arms about why, you know, healing turrets are actually the death of Overwatch 2 and why we should all abandon ship.
Well, we're gaslighting ourselves with Ana as we speak, or at least we were the last several weeks, you know, where everyone's like, oh, Ana. I mean, do you guys remember the tears with Kiriko and Brig, Lucio, Moira, and everyone wanted Ana? Where's Ana? You know, and then Ana comes in the meta, but Ana overstays her welcome, and anti-nade goes from being a fun and impactful ability along with Sleep Dart into an unfun, you know, fundamentally imbalanced ability. And so I think it's just about, like, how long does it stay? You know, how long will Iari be a must pick? I think you could look at turret and be like, all right, maybe the HP is a little high. I think the turret alone is kind of what's kind of bullying, at least according to the word of the streets, it's kind of bullying Tracer out of the meta a little bit.
Okay.
But I think it's, again, it's not about, there are no objective truths in Overwatch,
sure,
what's fun and what's not fun. It's mostly about how long is it before the welcome is overstayed, I guess.
I would agree that that's probably the only thing that I think you can trust in, is if something in Overwatch lasts for just a little too long, I think collectively everybody's like, yeah, I could live without a Sombra. I could live without goats. I could live without, like, we might be able to respect it, or maybe we'll enjoy it, but like, we could use like a new, you know, a dash or something. We could spice things up.
It's crazy how this game has just filtered for dopamine chases, right? Like, I was at RLCS.
Is it weird? I don't know.
I was at RLCS this weekend.
Uh-huh.
This game hasn't changed whatsoever in like 8 years or something.
I mean,
right?
It is Carball, yeah.
Carball, and like nothing changes about this game, right?
Yeah.
And it still, they had very significant meta changes that actually like changed who was good.
Oh, really?
Like in comparison to like season 6, what they are, and I think they're like, I don't know, season 11 or later now, right?
Okay.
And like, just the skill sets that people bring to the table and how the game is played is significantly different. But I also just like, coming from those games, just the comparison of like no changes in games like, you know, Rocket League, and then I guess CS is a little bit more towards the center of the distribution, to like, you know, the dopamine chasing games like Overwatch wants to be, but how Valorant is, I don't know. Like, I don't like being on the far side for an esport, and I think like it's a pretty big struggle. I think this dopamine chasing behavior and filtering for that audience will eventually always bite you in the ass for an esports game.
For esports, yeah, but that's always been the catch 22 yeah. for Overwatch, because that's also what makes the game so successful, I think, is mm-hmm. that like the game is so complicated, so many things happening at one time, so many heroes. It's like League of Legends, but shooting,
yes.
right? So
yes.
every game feels totally unique, totally overwhelming, totally confusing, and it feels awesome.
I love it, yeah.
And I think that's what has always been the difficult part with Overwatch, is like, can you balance that? Around making it a more engaging esport, more visually trackable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, without compromising the fun. I mean, the 5v5 definitely helped a little bit, but ultimately yeah. it's like almost feels like a fundamental quote-unquote flaw of the design.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I think, to your point, Jessica, I think there is, I do prescribe to like a lot of like rubber banding, where like, yeah, we are kind of facing a lot of like dopamine shifting. We need to make everything fresh all the time. We chase this like unquenchable thirst for novelty. But then we have games like chess having like a resurgence, and like, you look at a game like Rocket League, dude, that it's just cars and soccer,
that's,
football. Sorry.
Dude, I have a representative amount of people in my Discord that say Valorant feels too slow to them. And like,
I don't know. Yeah, of course there's going to be like a majority.
That is crazy to me. Like, have you watched Valorant recently? That shit just like is like 15% less hectic as Overwatch these days,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And still these dopamine sniping children just like can't stand that, like watching an angle like for 3.5 seconds instead of like, you know, the whatever it takes for respawn. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Like, I feel like it's crazy how fan bases filter towards like different cognitive types, almost like
the ADD game.
Yeah,
I picked Overwatch due to two reasons. One was Genji, and the second was the respawn timer. I tried CS at a friend's house, and I couldn't do it. I was a kid that when you play the Modern Warfare 2 at a friend's
sure.
house, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
man, I refused to play Search and Destroy because I'm not sitting and watching my team
yeah.
Search and Destroy.
I
want to
play.
I want to respawn. I want yep. to continue to play. And like, I think that's kind of what we have.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I would have to wager that, I think, as age increases, but maybe technology is getting a little too savvy to fight the urge of the dopamine succubus.
It's not an age thing. Like,
you don't think so? No,
dude, the best player at RLCS was a 16-year-old that just turned 16. This guy has, uh-huh. won every single title that he's competed in. Like, he won a major and now the world championship. He scored in own goals, just like by chance. Then
oh, really?
like minutes later scored the sickest goal in the tournament. When he won, Lee came into the press conference with like themed music. Like he had his cell phone in and like danced to the
dude. That's ballers.
Conor McGregor entrance.
Yeah. All chatted up. They're like, okay, so yeah, and then there's also like, of course, the MVP of the tournament, and this guy gets a translation, and he like nobody has told him yet who the MVP of the tournament is, and he says, "Where's my medal?" Like he already knew he was going to get it.
Where's my belt?
Like that kid was so chatted up. Zen is his name. That's for Vitality. Hilarious. Like I don't know. Like, and apparently there's this thing where like this scene, like Rocket League. It's not quite as young as Overwatch, but it's reasonably close. They, like, all the old guard has now been replaced, but while the game hasn't changed whatsoever from a gameplay point of view. So I'm not sure if it's really about age as much as really like cognitive profiles of what people like.
Sure.
I feel like it's also no coincidence that a game like Overwatch has like these wild colors that also appeal there, right? Like, that's, I feel like that's why I'm always attracted to Blizzard games, right? Like,
it's kind of programmed to be.
Yeah, it's. I think that's probably, and once again, like, far be it for me to flame my tribe, but I also think there are now other esports out there that are getting reasonably close to the same formula, and where you can also have a lot of fun. But yeah, like long story short, and to sort of like loop back in, I feel like we're also getting to a more fun point that also appeals more towards that player type. And I feel, in some ways, to that inner gremlin that I feel, Flashpoint and Illari are both heroes that really appeal to that. To that dopamine chasey, like head clicky, like I'm an on and off angle and do my own heroics play, and I'm not necessarily omega punished by it as much as like, you know, doing dumb shit on a flank on other maps because there's like one flank where you could reasonably come from. I feel like all of that, I don't know if you want to already like switch topics to Flashpoint, but I feel like this feels like a very different type of Overwatch to me.
Almost. Okay. See, now that's interesting for me to hear from you, because I know that you had like very staunch like hesitation, myself included. I'm like, I don't know about this random thing, and it feels like kind of similar to Control, and you know, God forbid if the map architecture just forces one comp. So like you're telling me something very different. So like it feels like your opinion has been shifted. Is that correct?
No. Like I still hate that. I hate all aspects of randomness in competitive games.
Okay? Fair.
Especially if you don't need them to be there, right? Like you could, much like how we have very similar, like, or an order of operation of map types in Overwatch League, right?
Yeah.
We also could just have like how these points unlock is a regular just tell a dude before the game starts, like, I don't know, maybe there's a highlight, okay, this is going to be like we go from middle point to this point to this point, and people can then plan.
It's like a racetrack.
It's just like not super nice competitively, depending on what kind of meta state you have, to be forced off a comp on a random chance, right?
On a whim, yeah.
Just because the map topography or verticality forces you off the composition that you can't play anymore. That might be optimal on first, might be optimal on two of the five slots,
right,
but might be suboptimal for like three of those, right? Like it's that type of randomness never feels good to me, and like it's unfortunately like I wonder if it's just more fun to do it that way, but to the general public, but like to me it always feels
I think it maybe it's like a sense of realism, just like, oh no, something hot is happening over here. We have to move over. But I mean, we've had that with Koth for 6 years, 7 years, right? Yeah. Like, you don't know what point you're going to get. And that's actually been a pretty important point. I remember in times past in Contenders and even with London, where it was like, oh no, we got this round first. Mm-hmm. They're going to know because we're going to tip our hand, or we got the one that we didn't want to play. And, you know, it puts us on the back foot. So now they can counter swap us for round two. And like, I agree with you, Skits. It's like, if there isn't some sort of like inherent fun to the variability, right? Yeah. Like, for example, I'm not saying this is good, but like a mid-season patch at least has the argument of, oh, we're going to mix the meta up so it's more good for viewership, right?
Yeah.
But unless it has, if it doesn't have at least that argument going for it, then I agree. I see no reason to compromise the competitive integrity.
And it feels like a lesson that should have been learned from like the initial launch of the game with like the original design for Control, where it was what, best of seven, so you played like up to five. Yeah, okay, so because I remember you could play like up to what was it, six, you could play, yeah, I think it was best of seven because you could like tie 3-3 on Control, I think. Am I misremembering that?
I don't remember. I
know you could like replay. Yes, you could like replay Control maps.
Gotcha.
And that sucked. That felt really, really bad to your point, where it's like, you know, if we don't gamble ruins enough, or we don't gamble village this many times, then our comp kind of sucks. And, you know, but if we do, then we, you know, and obviously that got changed and now we have Control the way that it works today. And I don't know. It echoes a lot of those same problems where it's just like, yeah, it's like fun to like have something, you know, to kind of touch back, you know, call back to like the dopamine stuff and have something very novel and have like a new game experience every time you load into a Flashpoint map. But at some point it feels like you lack agency to some degree. No,
I just don't think they care. Like, I don't think it's an issue, you know.
Agreed.
like I don't think, like, okay, it compromises competitive integrity a little bit, mm-hmm. but like I don't think it that matters enough to them to make an adjustment. So it's like, I'm not, you know, playing the martyr here. Oh, our poor esports here. I think there's bigger fish to fry when we're talking about Overwatch and esports. Yeah. But, you know, I don't think it's like at the top of my three things to change, you know.
It would be nice to see a change, but yeah, no, definitely some bigger whale sharks.
I still think, like, if you introduce a new feature, okay, unless you really have a plan how it works out in the long term and how you could, like, easily change, like, mm-hmm. that. Like, how it presents in the beginning seems less... I mean, ideally, you have something that presents well initially, and then as that problem that you already anticipated expresses itself, you just switch it up, and you have a solution, right? Mm-hmm. I just feel like Flashpoint is such a map that, like, as player skill develops, there will be very obvious issues with it, where eventually... The discourse might just switch, and mm-hmm. I'm not sure there are only easy solutions here, right?
Sure. So, well, foresight's never been a Blizzard strength.
Not at all. Pray. Yeah. Amen, brother. Good golly.
Like, I was part of a Q&A panel, and I asked I'm sorry if I got the title and the name, but the person that was responsible for some of the map designs... And they described, like, you know, Flashpoint as this map where it's always, like, interesting because, like, in the transition between points, you could, you know, catch someone off guard, and that makes it interesting and whatnot. And I'm like, yeah, that might happen, like, to, you know, bad players for a long time, to good players maybe at the start, and then eventually everyone figures out safer routes or... bunches up better or doesn't look into these sidelines, and the gameplay then transitions where it's just optimal play that's always guarded, and now you're just really running probably like an extra long route that just feels awful because you're running to the point for a very long. Actually, this is like, put a pin into this, I think we will have eventually, we really will have, especially from the competitive community, complaints about long runs. I think that's slowly coming in, but eventually it will only be considered a snooze fest because everyone will have their optimal routing, will always understand that there's probably not an interceptive move to make because everyone is already moving in pretty safe ways, and we'll just mm-hmm. like walk to the point for twice as long as it takes for them. Game on.
Sure. I think that that's honestly even a serious casual concern. In fact, I tweeted about it the day it was released. I played one game, and my support died, I think, 7 times coming back from spawn to a wrecking ball. Mm. Right? And you know, this isn't exactly the highest elo ever.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
Random quick play. But, like, I mean, that doesn't feel good for anybody. Nope. Right? That feels terrible. And the distance is unbelievable. Right? So it's like, you talk about casual experience. The casuals aren't going to like that either.
Yeah. Yeah, that, like, I think there is something... There's something really fun about, like, the meta of movement
yes.
when it comes to, like, a casual experience. Yeah, no. Any time, again, weirdly enough, circling back to, like, our previous discussion about, like, you know, dopamine sniping and all that stuff that Yiska kind of, like, spearheaded. We have selected a community from the top to the bottom of, like, people who just, like, want to log in and they want to play and they just want their happy juice from their brain right now, all the time, forever. So sure. If there's any point that we have to play, like, you know, we were kind of talking about pre-show, like, if we're playing, you know, Search and Destroy and I got to, like, sit and watch my friend fumble around whether he has a defuse kit, whether he doesn't. Is it A? Is it B? I don't know. The bomb exploded. Oh, shoot. And, like, I could have been playing. I could have been playing literally any other game and I could have been having fun. And now I'm sitting here watching this chuckle fuck figure out his head from yep. his ass. Like, that yep. sucks.
Yeah.
So no, I
think
I
even like hero specific too. Like you think about sure. like how that travel distance, you're gonna have the time to I don't know, Lucio's speed amp spawn and still have it by the time you get there. You'll have a time to Brigitte shield bash 5-6 times, right? Zenyatta, you're floating and you're doing nothing but floating, right? So it's gonna be a lot of spam your movement abilities, get there fast. If you don't have those movement abilities, you're at a significant disadvantage in recontesting quickly. And we see a little bit of that with like Lucio's speed and King of the Hill. I think this is going to be I think this mode might even be that on steroids in terms of that kind of a certain compositions don't feel quite as good.
Yeah, I could see like a lot of the subtle problems that maybe some other game modes haven't been like leveraging all that well. Flashpoint, yeah. It could be a big wake up call to really how the game is played for a lot of people, and it could shake things up. Did want to kind of circle back to, you know, Yiska, you brought up like ways to play the game, or you know, some ways to kind of think about things. You actually, you know, spoke to some insiders, some unnamed, some faceless folks in the scene doing some scrims. I don't know if last episode kind of helped that. Hopefully, maybe we can echo that same thing and get some more of that. But we did get some beta developments. We did get some insights. So if you wanna you know share some of that.
Yeah. So just to briefly explain how this generally.
Yeah, give
works.
Us a TLDR, please.
So the problem is like, of course, I don't want to impact competitive integrity, right? So. I cannot tell you the entire comp variety for those where some teams are going their own path. And right, like that would just be unfair. Maybe their opponents might be easily able to infer what they're like. Let's say I say someone is playing a Rein comp. Oh, guess who's playing the Rein comp?
Who?
Now the competitive integrity issue comes in when I tell you what they're playing with the Rein comp.
Yes, of course.
Right?
Of course.
So yeah. I cannot tell you about those. What I can tell you about is what generally people are trying.
Mm-hmm. And the trends.
The trends are that a lot of teams are playing a lot of different tanks. Tanks don't seem super settled. Orisa is like a little annoying. A lot of people are trying to make Sigma work, also because they have great Sigmas. A lot of people are still trying to make Winston work because, newsflash, they have pretty good Winstons, right?
Mm-hmm. And they've just played it for...
Or Winston specialists and whatnot.
Yeah.
So there's a variety on the tank position right now that I can't really think back to even have that ever happened to be the case at this stage, like this closely before like a meta start. So that's encouraging. Doesn't mean we won't converge on like 2 days beforehand and
yeah.
like something just like comes out as clearly the best thing. So with that comes also, of course, as tanks dictate what kind of a meta archetype you play, very different meta archetypes from some teams trying to still play dive. Other teams are playing some rush comp, of course. And then there's also, ever more so increasingly, bunker, right? And that type of archetype, as it was explained to me, was on the back of Illari and BAP. It's the justification given to me by two people was that BAP is best at filling the holes that Illari has in her ability or resource cycle.
Okay.
So, like, if heavy damage comes in and her healing resources are depleted, then you always have Lamp to go over, or, like...
Sure.
Also, BAP heals pretty well. Of course, the synergy between Window and Illari is obvious, right?
Yeah.
So, all of that makes a lot of sense. There are some structural reasons why teams might or might not want to play this, mainly because Illari very much feels like a flex DPS support. You could even think, and I'm not sure if that's happening, but maybe teams might try to put their DPS on that hero, right? Like, that's a
we do love thinking about that,
right? So if you have double flex, you might try be more inclined to try this. Not sure. Everyone does, and I think that's therefore a lot of teams are also trying Lucio, which is also pretty strong in this meta. Interestingly, Bunker, from what I understand, very often played on Flashpoint, which is sort of counterintuitive, right? Because, like, you kind of want Lucio to get around the map and whatnot. Apparently not that much in comparison. And then the DPS, best hit scan, from what I understand, is Soldier. There are others being tried, but Soldier, like, seems pretty well-rounded right now. And then other DPS, well, that really depends on your meta archetype. There it has been Soldier Dive, interestingly, on
interesting. Okay, so like a Tracer Soldier?
Yes, on maps where it's like flat.
Okay.
Tracer Soldier or Genji Soldier.
Genji 76. Now that's one for the bingo card.
Then some, of course, Tracer Genji on verticality maps. Still sometimes play Echo is in the mix on Dive.
Sure.
Otherwise, like, once again, as I told you, like, Sim was in some of those comps early on. Torb, Soldier. Torb is, like, a weird one. That's a hero that never really, like, it was okay, but keeps getting buffed, and eventually it's just, like, good enough, right?
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
And interestingly, from what I understand, also played an anti-dive.
Yeah, makes sense.
I'll have to look that up. But yeah, generally speaking, a ton of variety at the tank position. That also dictates a lot of variety at the DPS position. And then for support, I guess what we should also mention is Ana is still not out of the rotation, just because Ana's
hard to be. Yeah.
Right. Lucio is being played, Illari, Bab, the rest. Not so much. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's plenty to chew on. I think that's, you know, if we want to talk about, you know, having a sandbox meta, going back to, like, some of the more, you know, open metas that we've had, like, this feels very open. Spillo, kind of shooting to you, does any of that surprise you? After looking at that patch, after looking at Illari, like, is any of this, like, shocking?
No, I talked with a couple folks, and I think, like, the big thing for me is kind of going back to what I was saying about, like, Illari is just doesn't really fit an archetype. So it's going to be about which teams read about how she's going to best fit in what they want to play, right? I don't think any hero besides I honestly don't know that any hero besides Illari right now is actually, like, dictating the meta. I think it's actually Illari dictates the meta, and then everybody tries to find a way to best fit their strengths around that. And that might go in a million different directions at once. And I think that's why we see so much tank and DPS Fridays, because we don't know what's going to work best with her, right?
Yeah.
It's not obvious, right? Like we were talking about earlier, Jungle Queen's released, we see Lucio.
Yes.
Is Lucio OP?
Yes.
No. But Lucio, Jungle Queen needs a Lucio. What does Illari need? I don't know. Like, every team's going to have a different read with what that may or may not be. I think the Soldier read is the one that's pretty clear to me that that flankers are having a hard time. Because having a DPS that's being able to self-sustain with ERA, I think is pretty important. Her range deal is super unpredictable, like not unpredictable, but unreliable, right?
Sure.
So having a self-sustained flanker that's not Sombra Tracer is probably pretty important. I guess the word on the street is that heal turret and M1 is kind of a nightmare to deal with as a flanker that's not Soldier, and Soldier can easily deal with the turret and do damage right through it. That would be my read. In terms of like some of the other tank reads, I don't know. I think obviously like Rissa receives some minor buffs here. I think a lot of that is probably just depending on where that goes. Sigma's really good versus Orisa. I don't think Sigma's a strong tank right now, but might be one of those, hey, this is what's being played, so this hero is good versus what's being played kind of a situation.
Yeah.
If you don't see as much Sombra Tracer, that makes Sigma a lot more attractive immediately. Mm-hmm. The Batista one is definitely interesting to me. I think that's definitely works really well with Orisa. And he does complement some of Yari's weaknesses, but I think there's other supports that could do that too. Like, maybe no Sombra, no Tracer, so we don't need Briggers in. We don't need Ana. The immediate weakness I see of Batiste that I think Yari and Batiste both have major weaknesses with is they don't have a really reliable range squishy heal, besides a static turret. So that, to me, tells me immediately that Sombra, Tracer, even more mobile tanks are just, like, not falling out of favor, or like falling out of favor, I guess, in that regard. Because if you were to run those heroes, or even something like a Genji Echo, you would probably want to pair that with an Ana or something instead, like Iari Ana. And there's also a little bit of the word on the street is, you know, a couple of tweets went out recently, even. There's a little bit of gaslighting I hear. I actually think there's been a little bit of purposeful gaslighting I've been hearing, half tongue in cheek. There's been some discussions about Bastion, and while I think Bastion is actually crazy for ranked, and then the 50 armor heal I think is big too. And there's a couple of things that are kind of floating around that may or may not be fake news. And I was like, I thought it was a joke at first, but nope, it's actually happening a little bit.
Really? So
just a little bit, which is kind of
funny. if you're plugged into the Overwatch like sphere, I'm sure you've seen a certain tweet, and I think I'm thinking of the same tweet that
you definitely are.
There is a very bizarre tank hero that just apparently is just not the most unfun hero ever, and
it's funny to me.
You can find it.
Yeah, it's funny. So we'll have to wait and see. Yeah, I think like Yosuke was saying, there's a lot of little heroes that have received a little buffs here and there, a little bit of Symmetra here, a little bit of Torbjorn there. Are they going to be enough to push them into the meta? I don't know, but I would. You really don't know. You really never know.
I really enjoy the way that you kind of frame Iari as this like Pandora's box, because it feels like we're walking into the Golden City. And like everything we've ever wanted is here, but like there is this undercurrent of like, okay, if we do figure out how to make Iari work, we don't know what that looks like just yet. And that might be that, like, in shows past, I think Christopher pinned or kind of like spun this up or pinned or penned this analogy of like the Torb virus, where like one team just plays Torb and it works enough that like everybody just starts playing Torb, and it's like, okay, once Iari gets figured out by one team for like a week or two and they start like cleaning out scrims with it, everybody's just trying to reverse engineer it, and now it's this big rat race. So it's like, I hate saying this, but we are gonna have to just wait and see. But this is like positive, early reads of things, that like there is a lot of testing, people are searching for some answers, and that should lead to some interesting developments, at least I would hope.
I agree. And I think the key word is the developments, not conclusions.
Yes.
Because I think there's a lot of heroes that you could conclude solutions from. I don't think Iari, at least anytime soon, is going to have any straight hard conclusions immediately, which I think is great. Right?
Yeah.
We don't really know where she fits in, right? Like, we talked about this with Lightweaver, like the good side and bad side of Lightweaver.
Yes.
This is a strong hero that doesn't perfectly synergize with any sort of composition. So that's a very interesting dynamic. But I don't think to my knowledge, I don't know that we've had that before with Overwatch.
I mean, you think of like Ana when she came out, like that was pretty quickly like, oh, Nano Boost is like insane. We're just going to throw that on Reaper and he's going to melt people. Right. Yeah, like it. We usually get pretty close to like Yiska's favorite term, like the Nesh equilibrium. Like we'll get to something that looks like that pretty quickly. Iari does. Yeah, I think I'm leaning your direction where it's like she doesn't really, she does a lot that's good, but like she doesn't fit anything that we've really seen before. So either we're going to see a completely new style of play or like somebody's going to figure out how to break her.
Right.
I think that's the interesting line to think of these. It's not what, how it's how best to use her, and that's very that's a very difficult question to answer. That's a $1 million question, really.
Is it surprising to you that you don't see much break? Is she just nerfed into the ground, or is she a bad addition to Iari? Because Brig, I mean, hard meta, like highest unmerited win rate in the first half of the season, pretty good at keeping Ana alive. Like,
yeah, you're getting to my favorite topic, which is the Blizzard's problem with balance, which is where they don't understand the difference between power and synergy.
Right. Mm.
And so when you look at Brig, I mean, Brig, I don't think has ever been an objectively strong hero in Overwatch 2. Maybe with a Rally rework, I think a little, definitely not a weak hero. Mm. But still, she wasn't the reason that the meta was defined that way. The reason the meta was defined that way is because Ana very strong, Winston very strong, yes. Other DPS that aren't Sombra Tracer are not strong at all. Mm-hmm. So of course you're going to play Brig. Like, what else are you going to play? Like, Lucio in dive meta is the 2017, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So I think that's, I mean, there were even, I mean, that's why Double Flex was around so much back in 2022, is because she was so weak. So I think to me, it's like when I see things like, oh, we nerfed her shield, and maybe there's some other numbers that are going on behind the scenes that I'm totally ignorant of, but it's like a little bit of classic Blizzard balancing where it's like, well, was Brig really in need of a nerf? I think she was just a compliment to what was needed. And so like right now, if Iari is dominating flankers, if turret is too good, if her shift, it just denies the need for a whip shot or a shield bash or an armor pack, then you're not going to see Brig. That's just, it's that simple. There's other supports that do that job better. Or do provide value besides anti-dive, anti-whipshot on Winston or Ball or Tracer and Sombra and so on.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think there is, I think you're pretty dead on the money when it comes to like finding the keys to a lot of the rigidity in these metas isn't as obvious as you might think, where it's just like, oh, Junker Queen is, you know, good or bad, like nerf Junker Queen. It's like, well, you know, there's a little bit more going on under the hood than just like shit, press shift, run at face. Like there's ways of facilitating that. Like, is that the problem? Like, is, you know, back to like the discussions that like Avril and I and like all plenty of people have had regarding like, you know, is Widowmaker the problem, or is it the pocket of the Mercy that's the problem? Is it Discord that's the problem? Like, is it the way that we facilitate these heroes that is the issue, or is it actually the hero? Both can be very true, but like we have to approach balance in two different ways, and it can't just be we've reduced the clip size of Widowmaker's rifle. Is going to, you know, it's
hard to do. You have to get to the root issue.
I get it.
You know, you have to get to the root issue. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember, but back in Overwatch 1, it was like classic Blizzard. I don't know how many DPS heroes got buffed prior to the end of GOAT until they finally introduced Rolok, and we had abominations like Hanzo. Yep. We had Reaper and Mei. I remember they kept buffing Reaper and Mei, hoping that the anti-tank DPS heroes, and I was like, these guys aren't real, right? And I'm not saying that those developers are necessarily still employed with Blizzard. and if they are, hopefully that they've learned their lesson. But it's like that kind of stuff that is like, you have to be really careful with. It's like, why was Winston Sombra Tracer meta, right? To me, it actually started with the DPS conversation. Like, I don't think Hitscan was ever weaker as it was several stages ago, right? And so then, you know, we go from there. But if you're not very careful with addressing the root issue, then what ends up happening is not only do you not actually fix the root issue, but you make it a lot worse. And the other thing that it's often paired with is Blizzard's like, oh, we're not seeing enough Orisa and Moira. Let's buff those heroes. Yep. And, you know, I will say, though, that, like, for example, some of the all this negativity, some of, like, the Orisa Moira changes recently have actually been fairly decent. Like, Orisa's survivability, a little bit nerfed. Her range, a little bit buff. That's okay.
That's like a good quality life. It's buffed. Yeah.
Right. Moira, her HOT and her spray got buffed. She gets a little bit of resource on a damage orb. That added a little bit of complexity to the hero that wasn't there before. So I think, like, all things considered, like, we're getting there, you know? And even the Cassidy changes, right? I think a lot of people, I think, I hate the Nate, first off. I hate the Nate. I think that's the coldest nick of all time. But the 225 HP. Oh, you know, he doesn't deserve that. But the problem was is that they buffed his range, right? So that he was competing with Hanzas and Ashes and Sojourns when he shouldn't have been competing at that range, right? Yep. So they gave him the 25 HP back. They take away his fall off, you know, juice. And so now he actually has a little bit of a niche. You kind of see what I'm saying? So it's like, that to me is like, it has a direction for it, you know? And I think they are, I think overall, a lot of changes have kind of moved in the right direction with that regard.
Very quick, in terms of like what you're saying and in the interdependencies and having to, you know, balance synergies rather than, you know, individual hero power. It's interesting that a company that developed stuff like World of Warcraft doesn't get this, right? Because I remember, like, in Arena, we had discussions with a guy called Ghostcrawler. Ghostcrawler was, like, one of the head developers at the time. Jeff was also around, of course. And, true. Like, Ghostcrawler, by, like, trade, or rather what he studied, is actually a marine biologist. This guy had an intricate understanding of how, and talked about how it helps him to understand how ecosystems work and how one change just like impacts the entire ecosystem and how you might change something in a way that you wanted to at a completely different side of the game. It just works. Or you can also destroy it just as easily, right? This, which is the more likely. And like that a company with, you know, that in their DNA had such problems to get that, especially during Overwatch 1, is interesting. Also, just like maybe interesting tidbit, Ghostcrawler then went to Riot Games, started like with the MMO there, and now he's out of Riot Games and he
doing his own thing, right?
Doing his own thing,
yeah,
with John Spector. he's at the company as well. So yeah, game development is pretty small. Yeah,
that's funny.
No, I think though, like the way that we've always kind of talked about Ghostcrawler, like in behind the scenes, like in Discord, which, you know, shout outs if you want to join and take part in some absolutely bonkers discussions, check it out. There's something to like ecosystems and like the way that you talked about, you know, marine, that you cite marine biology, or rather he cites marine biology. It kind of reminds me of like bringing the wolves back to like Yellowstone and like why that was such a big deal for the ecosystem and like how they did it. Like, one little change, it might not seem impactful now, but that's because we don't really think about foresight, and Blizzard's very bad about foresight, and like we're just too, you know, circling back to like how Spill, you talked about, like, you know, oh, to kill goats we need the tank killers to be good, and like that's the problem. It's like we've made so many mistakes thinking about the game that we're approaching the problem in the wrong ways. Like, we have to strip away what we knew and like kind of reapproach it from the kind of ground up. And yeah, it's never as easy as it sounds. And I know that's frustrating to, I think, a lot of people, because it's like, it's clearly that this hero is broken, but, and we may all agree, but we don't really agree on why the hero is broken, I think is the crux of the discussion, right?
Yep. 100%.
That's the tough one.
It's almost like a Moira issue, right? Where the combined numbers, the sheer numbers are just too high. And not only are the sheer numbers, what she probably does even better than Moira is like she really has effective damage, it feels like. Like, because her breakpoints work, it's not like you're just like always poking, you're always exuding kill pressure onto a flanker. Like, as soon as you feel the first dome, you gotta get out of there or it's over for you, right? I think that's also very obvious. Like, very much feels like, because we don't know about the synergies yet, and that in itself, the fact that we already feel like Iari is a little too strong before we have figured out synergies, is that, like, her damage, that's another tidbit from the scrims, is that she top damages quite a lot of scrims, right? Like, over the DPS.
And it's interesting to me, too, with that, because that is not at all going to be reflected in ranked.
Yeah,
but when you put that hero in the right hands, you know, that effective damage that's not just spamming damage orbs down a choke, you know, or shooting the enemy tank, you know.
Yeah. I also, it's hard to, The shooting mechanic felt a little counterintuitive to me at the start. Like, the shooting cadence is very unusual, I feel like. You have to wait a very long time comparatively, right?
Yep.
Like, it almost feels like...
And I did
like,
the numbers, right? At least surface area, and I'm fair, to my knowledge, it's much lower DPS to spam. Maybe not much, much lower, but it is. You should almost never spam.
Yep. Yeah, only if you really can realistically get the kill, or like otherwise you wouldn't be able to do the damage. But
each situations, yeah.
Yeah, she feels much more like shooting as Widow than it feels like shooting McCree. And that might not be true based on the cooldowns between shots. Maybe the other case is true, but like, yeah, the getting the timing right seems super crucial.
It's almost psychological. I knew I used to coach a lot of Sojourn players, especially when she built Braille, like literally every other second, you know? And one of the skills we used to practice was like being able to be calm, like a real life sniper, like take the breath, you know, and being able to kind of hit the shot, relax, hit the shot, relax, hit the shot, some sort of trigger discipline, you know? Mm. And I've definitely feel like the case of the Yari. You miss your shot, well, you're going to be looking kind of awkward for about a second or so.
Mm-hmm. And then the natural reaction is to like, oh, I got to like make up for it. I have to compensate. Right. I need to shoot quickly. And it's like, no.
The cool thing is that between cooldowns, it now feels very effective to also go for a quick heal, right? Just top up.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Because like the synergistically is like, I wait for my shot. Okay. Now I heal. Okay. Now while my healing, energy is coming up again, I can shoot again. Right. And it also like, what it does do is make flick aim much more needed than you would have it in other characters, right?
Sure.
Like the lining up, because you need to switch between ally and enemy sometimes, just feels like she might be the most aim requiring hero, maybe.
Could be. I mean, you look at this, at least for support, there's no support that functions like her at all. Even heroes like Xenyatta and Ana have much larger clips and can dump damage for... Just, you miss a shot, you take another shot, you take another shot.
Yes.
Moira, you just spam. Lucio, spam. Maybe Brig with Whipshot, you know, not as... But that one's kind of a neat situation. BAP, very spammy. Never... BAP is actually almost like the total opposite, where it's just about like maximum time on damage, shields, whatever you can shoot, right? But with Yari, it's all about like you hit it or you don't.
Mm-hmm. Even though there is a rotational stuff with BAP as well, right? With shooting and healer stuff. If it is all
a weave.
Yeah.
This one, Yari feels more natural in the way that, like, I feel like they wanted BAP for, again, speaking from like a casual audience perspective, like, they wanted BAP to have that weave. And I think they hoped that the casual audience would kind of learn to like weave that in, and it doesn't feel like that's taken hold. Whereas Yari, it's a very natural cadence to be like, okay, well, I have this downtime, so like I can heal and then I can go back to shooting, and then I can heal and then I can shoot. Like, there is that, like, I feel like it's going to be easier for the average audience to kind of like pick up on the more, you know, subtle mechanics to her.
Sure.
I think it's, again, one of my favorite heroes they've released in recent memory. Really, really cool.
I mean, we can crap on them for all they want, and I will definitely respect
them. Oh, gladly. Yeah, same.
And here's the hot take for a little bit on Ramattra as well. I think in terms of in-game, I don't think he functions near as well as he should. But Overwatch 2 heroes, really fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, really super engaging, super fun. Like, I feel powerful when I play them. My ults feel good. Like, it feels like Overwatch, which is like a refreshing take. And yeah, like Lifeweaver's kind of a dud. Like, some of the reworks have been kind of hit or miss. But yeah, no, they've still got it. They got some.
What is it? Ball, Echo, Kiriko, Queen, Sojourn, now Yari. And I think, you know, Ramattra's a controversial one, but still a lot of fun. So there's a lot of, like, you compare that to the Junkrats and, and the Bastions such. It's like, feels like a different game.
Mm-hmm.
What I also really like, and I'm unfortunately, maybe they will fix that, but it feels like there's also some hidden depth with Yari. I don't know if you guys saw the Get Quaked On explanation of the movement tech on her shift.
Saw the video. I haven't watched it yet, but bookmarked.
Yeah, she has like B-hop mechanics. There's something about...
Really?
Like, yeah, there's like something about boosting on stairs. There's something about side gliding and how momentum travels. Like, there's a lot of... hidden depth to that ability. Also, just how you gain maximum height and whatnot. Sure. There's an elusive amount of, or like a non-obvious amount of depth hidden in that ability that gives some flavor. It like reminds a little bit of, you know, like Doom movement tech or like ledge dashing from way back when, but in a much more healthy way. I hope they don't touch it.
It feels like the way they code some of the mobility in the game always leaves back doors for people figuring out things like that, you know? And I forget, I don't remember where I was listening to some podcast or video. It might have been this with somebody else, but we're talking about how, like, if we were to ever have any sort of quote-unquote creep in Overwatch 2, a mobility creep is probably the healthiest one to have, especially with 5e5. And I've always agreed with that take.
Yeah,
because you don't want damage. Mobility feels like the most tame, but...
Yeah, it's autonomy is what mobility is.
Yes,
it allows you to control and move about the map and as demanded, right? So, kind of you make your choices, you make your bed, and you lie in it. And so, if you miss position, it's not my team wasn't coming back from spawn or I got surrounded. You could have moved, you just chose not to.
Yeah, or you moved at the wrong time and you were punched. Yeah.
Right. And it's the heroes that lack that mobility that have to compensate for it elsewhere, and that's when we usually have the problematic balance heroes. Yeah. Right? Your Zens, your Bastions, your Junkrats, your Orisas, and so on. I mean, I used to joke, I've made literally, like, only half joking that Orisa should be able to helicopter like she did in the experimental patch.
Yeah.
Imagine, you could actually reduce so much of her survivability if she could do that.
Yeah, she just, like, helicopters away?
Right, you could justify Fortify like actually doing a lot less than it does now if she could do that. She can't, so it's like, you know, that's all she's got going for her, really. I mean, even Ryan, like, and I actually do think that's something that purposeful that they try to do, at least to an extent. Like, you look at somebody like, you know, even with Orisa, right? The Javelin Spin is mobility. Mm-hmm. Bastion does have mobility. You look at Reinhardt, right? The charge change was by far the biggest Reinhardt change. Like, that is the ability to control, cancel, and have that on a lower cooldown. The TP deploy rate, cooldown of that. Like, every hero is kind of getting a little bit of a mobility creep. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's also, like, when I did the coach panel, that was very much something that 9K also said. Like, where he said he wouldn't mind if every hero just got free mobility.
A movement
it
skill.
Would just be more fun. Like, make I don't know, McCree's role even more, you know, long range, maybe shorter cooldown. Sure. Like, give non-mobile heroes more options and, like, have that just be a more fun experience at all levels.
Yeah, I don't hate that. I don't hate every character having their own mobility. I hate the facilitating of mobility because then I think it breaks things. Then you get like problems where it's like, okay, well, this hero is balanced because it isn't mobile, and then if we give it a bunch of mobility, now we have a problem. Now we've got some issues. But if everybody just has like an equal, like if we, as a design philosophy, we approach everything with, okay, everybody has a move skill, then I don't care that. I could live with, you know, Zen being able to teleport through a wall a short distance or, you know, whatever, what have you. Like, I don't hate
floor, jumps
and I could jump with his kick. Fucking, I don't know. Figure it out. Like, it's there's endless ways to do it. And I think, yeah, I would agree with what sounds like 9K was saying. Like, yeah, it's more fun to be able to move around and shoot. It opens up a lot of possibilities. One thing I did kind of want to end on before we get out of here, we are getting some new maps, but the key factor that we also have to remember, and I think we're going to have to say this a few times, is the map change only happens after the conclusion of the play-ins.
Correct.
So not in the next 2 weeks, not in play-ins, but for playoffs proper, we will be playing Antarctic Peninsula for control, Busan, Ilios, Lijiang, Hybrid, Blizzard World, Kings Row, and Midtown for Hybrid. I think I said that. Flashpoint. Yeah. I send you the...
Thank you.
Drop it in here. And then obviously the two Flashpoint maps, Dujunk City and Suravasa, hopefully I'm saying that right. Push, Coliseo, Esperanza, and New Queen Street, and Escort, Circuit Royal. Another, you know, maybe Double Flex favorite. Dorado, Route 66, and Shambali. So again... Some of the more dive-centric maps kind of going by way of night, you know, some Gibraltar is getting removed, you know, Nambani was quickly here, and now it's not. So, like, there does feel like a shift, and I feel like maybe the meta is also kind of following that shift, I don't know, maybe?
Splatter.
Yes, feels like it.
It's flatter. That, I mean, that's why we saw so much Echo for a brief period of time. You know, it was just New Bonnie Gibraltar. You can play the hero. I mean, obviously, is that super relevant with, especially with how many ERE things that we've seen coming up? Maybe not. I don't know. I'm trying to see. Circuit Royale obviously is always the redheaded stepchild of the map pool. Dorado definitely introduces its own niche strategies here. I mean, that's a real question. Is the existence of Sombra nerfed so bad that you can't play Widow on Dorado? Because if we see really no flankers, you will see Widow on Dorado.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly while en route as well. So we could see some more sniper matchups if things do move towards bunker and so on, as we were talking earlier. I mean, it's definitely going to be interesting. There's a good variety in these maps. Busan, definitely the most unusual Koth map, I think, as well, for the comps that it can provide there too. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
And he takes on Shambali. I feel like that's another one that goes, for me at least, by way of Circuit Royal, where it's like, I don't know that we've ever figured it out just yet.
It's just very narrow is the problem. Mm. It's very narrow. So it lends itself to something with a long sightline, right? Mm-hmm. Or Brawl, right? That doesn't, because there's not enough breadth to the map to be able to take consistent angles. I think it's going to depend on the meta at the point in time. Will Ryan still be playable because it's escort and it's narrow? Yes, 100%. Mm-hmm. Will we unironically see a Sigma comp? Possibly. Could be. I mean, that would be... It's like a slightly less annoying Circuit Royale.
It feels like it, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm Jessica, also...
I know you want to come.
I mean, why Blizzard World, man?
You don't like Blizzard World?
This is the last... Probably the last season. Why are we like, oh, dude, like the last thing I want to celebrate here is Blizzard, okay? Like,
okay.
Also,
you don't
want to
go to
Hearthstone
garbage. Land?
This is just bad. Like, in comparison to like the alternatives, I don't know. I feel like Blizzard World misses the mark big time. Other than that, yeah, I think like to keep compositional diversity in mind is a big deal, right? Like for this one, because you want by the maps you enforce metas, and to have as much diversity there allows for the most diverse meta possible, depending on the game state, right? And also the time people have to develop these strategies. So, which, by the way, like I think it would have been a way easier win to just come out with this map pool, and I don't quite understand why we're not starting out on this, right? Because I think I would have to look at it again. I'm not sure how many maps are changing, but it feels like a significant amount, no? From the current map pool?
I'd say
definitely like, Noombani and Jib that you brought up earlier.
Yeah. Those are the two big ones, obviously, with Dive kind of maybe being drawn into question. Those feel pretty impactful, but outside of
Oasis,
like the obvious and Flashpoint.
Oasis.
But, yeah. The big one?
That's a more Brawl focused one.
Yeah.
I can't off the top. It's funny. It's like they're always you've seen them a thousands of times. The escorts are always the interesting ones. Let me actually pull this up really fast because these are no Rialto, no Jungertown, no Havana, no. Obviously, we talked about Gibraltar as well. Mm. I mean, escorts are generally sniper focused anyway, and then
like
hybrid.
It,
yeah. No, wait. Eisenfeld.
Yeah. Graded, Jessica? Solid A?
Yeah, all good.
Okay.
Granted.
Okay, perfect. Noombani, obviously. Honestly, I would be glad the less we see of Noombani, the better.
Sure,
right?
Yeah.
And Powder Iso, I think, kind of falls into that category as well. I just think... I guess it's not as bad to watch, but I think it's a sympathetic watch.
Mm.
I feel your pain, Overwatch players.
Yeah.
It's a kind of in a window. Hollywood's not currently being played, is it?
In the summer stage, was, Hollywood right? is no.
No. So that one will that's interesting. That's the one hybrid or one of the maps that we're not gonna see for the longest, maybe.
Hold. Yeah. Eric is saying it was.
Okay, it was. Well, disregard.
I feel like it was. No?
Looking at Liquipedia, it says summer
it
stage.
It was played spring, I know for sure.
Yeah, spring it was played, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So we're going basically mid-season on to the end of possibly Overwatch League. No Hollywood. No, kind of sucks.
Mm.
Inauspicious ending. It's okay. A second point has always been kind of brutal. But.
Yeah, I'd say so. That one's a tricky mistress to figure out, especially if you lose control. That one's. Yeah.
You know what's funny about that map is that was like a great example of like one of those tiny little details that we're talking about, like the butterfly effect or the marine biology, right? One of the small little things that made that map a lot better was the automatic elevators.
Yeah.
I remember when that first happened and how much easier that map got.
You know, yeah. I never really thought about it until, like, I remember, like, Mangachu, God bless, you know, shout out to the real ones who remember, like, he was a big stickler about, like, random elevators, and I forever mauling about, like, boy, I'm so glad I cannot take this team fight when I want to, because the elevator is just up when it should be down.
Yep. Yeah, and it's like, I remember seeing those Busan mecha-based clips, the little things that go up and down, you know?
Like, I'm glad I just get shot here. Great. Yep, love that. Yep.
Are there any other places in the map that have it? I swear. The Blizzard World first point. The stupid little eagles. That reminds me of the stupid Mischief and Magic game where everyone gets the the eagle little they copy the eagle seat car ride thing, and they'll like pretend to be one of the little things going in a circle. You know, I thought it was funny.
Or the waltz, right? On
yes.
Those are also stupid. Like again, like you take that feedback and go, let's do more. Like it's why?
Yeah. This has been buried in an email thread for forever. Another like I don't know if you just mentioned it or not because my internet's being kind of shoddy. Like I when I saw Blizzard World first come out, I was like, bro, one of these probes is gonna block a headshot and like somebody's going to like bald their pants off. And luckily we haven't seen it, but because
Para rocket or something like this,
sure. Like it we're looking for a pause break and if to have a pro like actually get upset at a ref because this stupid fucking RNG just decided that a probe was gonna come into my line of sight, like God
all
bless
part of the
man.
Charm you gotta
it's the good and the bad and then some more of it and you know.
Oh man. It's like what do they say, like the Gibraltar blinding, like the Gibraltar flashbang, on first point, you know? It's like, oh, it looks beautiful if I could see it anymore, you know? I'm completely blind. Oh man. But speaking of Gibraltar though, the map changes. What do y'all's vote for the next map?
Oh, for the next map change.
Because they said that this is a start of a larger project that we're
And I do like that. I like the fact that like we're shifting resources away from making new maps, Paris, you know, like almost any of the new maps that aren't for like core game mode releases, but like new maps suck. Nobody likes new maps. Just rework the old maps and try to fix them. Figure out what's wrong with them and like make them better. Is there one that I really would like to see changed?
I've got two.
Okay, let me hit me with yours and let's see if it
circuit.
It, okay,
Mumbani.
Yeah, I don't hate that.
See, this is where you have to get the casual mindset involved as well, right? Because you got to know this isn't
that's fair.
So it's like, you know, Mumbani first point. I was joking the other day. It's like the easiest attack ever, right? Mm-hmm. For pros,
for casuals,
anybody else. I mean, for the vast majority of ranks, you know, it's a miserable experience attacking that first point. Yeah. And that map has a lot of other problems too. But
I don't hate that shout. That's a good one. I like the way that you're approaching it, where it's not just from like the pro level, but it's like what are the problem maps? Like, obviously, like Paraíso is like kind of just a weird one. I'd like maybe another attack path that isn't just like under the choke and like this weird like around the you have to go out of your way and there's like a health pack there. That one always just feels kind of weird to go down if you're not a flanker.
Second point, high ground control is also a nightmare.
Isn't Colosseo also an obvious one?
Yeah, you're talking to the right guy. Yeah. Something about removing something. That still annoys me so much, like, without ranting about that. It's, like, the simplest change. It's, like, it's literally Paris almost 2.0, where it's, like, you have this one choke, and mm-hmm. any other flanker angle that you take is basically irrelevant or almost impossible to utilize, right?
Yep.
And so how do we not see the problem with that, right? And it's, like, all you have to do is just remove the glass, you know, yep. and all of a sudden, like,
everything's open up.
Brawl yep. comps, spam comps, you can take off angles, you got so much more space as a tank, you can see more. Like, that side of the map also gets used a lot more,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Because it's actually accessible now. Like, we've got this, like, dead zone that almost nobody goes through. And, I mean... You know, it is what it is.
Yeah, no, it. You're basically playing on an island. It's necessary to control because you don't want, you don't want Sparker just flanking you. Shout out to Panta.
Yeah,
just saying, you know.
But even that, like, you shouldn't be, you shouldn't have to fucking rotate through the southern hemisphere in order to get a
flanker.
No, I
know.
Right?
You shouldn't have to, but, like, that will forever be one of my favorite metas because, like, you look at a team like Atlanta, you look at a team like London, and you look at the resources that Sparker had. This motherfucker was just running marathons in those head-to-heads.
I swear Kai probably still has Night Terrors just
Oh,
he's on the flash kid.
I to this day still message Sparker and be like, you should have been on an angle. I'll just send him a screenshot from like Overwatch League and like, why weren't you on the flank? Why aren't
just
you on the
flank
an angle?
Here, dude? Yeah.
Coach angle guy, just angles. When you're losing, the answer is always take more angles. Never group up. That's the Spylo strategy. Never group up.
You'll always have a friend in me if you're just using Lucio as a resource to take more flanks. More flanks, more fun.
Do that with Admiral. Admiral, why aren't you helping Sparker?
Just get him across the map, bro.
Your Ryze is going to pin anyway, so like, he doesn't need speed. Like, what are you doing?
Hottie is just a shift bot. Let's just say what it is. Like, just get Sparker on a flank, please.
My wife still jokes that like I'd be listening, you know, to scrims with my headphones off and just the speakers blaring, and she'd always be like, "Oh, that's the Landon phrase. I'm dead. I was Landon that entire season. Poor guy. I mean, he was such a good bat player, but that bat was so bad in that comp. That now is still like you just dive and he just dies. It's like literally nothing you could do. Lamp shift doesn't matter. You're dead.
And
so you just die and you just your team wins the fight. You're like, all right, well, I did my job. Jeez,
I stayed alive long enough.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Oh man. All right. As we kind of reach to the end, anything, any winners that we think of? We kind of talked about the meta. We talked about some of the maps. We have like at least a general kind of idea of like maybe what's being played. Is there anybody that any team that jumps out to you as we kind of roll into the end of the show that like could be an overperformer as we get into the playoffs?
I think team play is going to matter a lot, as well as like if somebody can play ERE well, right? So we talk about like Atlanta is Atlanta because Atlanta has everything going for them, team play, everything, but they also have Lip, right?
Sure.
Well, now, you know, is there any one DPS hero or tank hero that you absolutely have to play if you have a specialist, you have a net buff? I don't know right now, you know what I'm saying? So it's like a lot of teams can kind of make their own decisions with what they want to play and lean into their strengths. So, and as of right now, at least obviously there's not a one hero besides ERE that's absolutely dominant. You must play, you must pick. So that definitely opens the floor up to just generally better team oriented teams. And I think also, you know, as Yusuke was saying earlier, like, how many of these teams are going to be able to comfortably play double flex if that is indeed one of the things the meta is shifting towards? And I think that's definitely an interesting one.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
I feel like the obvious winner would probably have to be Toronto.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right? With Kalush being able to play Sigma or whatever other hero, like get off the Winston. And then also the ability to... wait, am I wrong? No, they still have
bad man. Yeah,
bad yeah. So double flex man. For sure. And then I feel like Houston would be in a way better slot if they still had Gargoyle.
Oh yeah, that one's a rough one.
So,
I don't think they'll be too worse for wear, but it's definitely going to be like that's the narrative that we're going into playoffs with is like, okay, well, like, what is Houston going to do? Because they like they check all the rest of the boxes, but like the tank one, we'll see what that looks like.
Maybe Boston, right? Like Izayaki, Twilight. Good. Sounds
yeah,
nasty.
They've got an embarrassment of resources at their disposal, so you could mix and match all kinds of players. Yeah,
Yeah, they have phenomenal mechanical players. They have no mechanical weaknesses. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, well said.
Yeah, maybe.
Mayhem. Maybe.
Mayhem just might thrive in the chaos of things. They might just do some wacky shit.
Gameplay. I mean, Shorong is probably one of the best main supports when it comes to flexing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not Violet, but he is really quite good. I mean, he played a really solid Kiri, played a solid Ana as well. So you have options there that other teams, obviously someone, probably the most flexible tank in the league. You know, and if there were ever in a meta where we could put Mera on a go click and shoot hero, like he's one of the best in the world. Top mm-hmm. two or three, I might even say. So that's another plus.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to what Atlanta is cooking up because theoretically, like, of course, they also have an embarrassment of riches. They could still put Hawk on Sigma and whatnot. Like, that would be very good.
A lot of people forget Vig is still on the bench.
Vigilante like, he's still
sitting there waiting.
Like, that guy might just pop off and, like, be the best Iari. Like, I could totally see that being the case. Ridiculous aim talent. So, like, theoretically, on paper, they have it there, which, fortunately... Like, hopefully that is true, because there wouldn't be nothing more clown fiesta than a super dominant, or relatively dominant. I guess they taper it off a little bit at the end, but mm-hmm. Atlanta Reign just, like, shitting the bed as the first opportunity in playoffs. That would just suck. To be fair, they also have a lot of time now to adjust, so that helps as well. Yeah, and otherwise, maybe Shock could be doing something. Like, they already have been playing Chaos the entire season. Maybe they have some...
Kind of double flex, kind of.
A little bit.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, London might be a big winner in terms of, like, if the stuff can work in terms of, you know, alternative comps being... much more of an opportunity, because you know these guys love playing curveballs. Otherwise, you know, NYXL, the obvious one, is putting fits on Iari as well.
Yeah. Not a bad. Yeah, I don't hate that shout. That's something that we're going to have to pay attention to, because, you know, Omi can aim.
Yeah.
She's, you know, an aim hero. It's going to be impactful.
That's honestly, like, if you get 3 DPS on your roster instead of double flex, like, putting your DPS on that hero is absolutely viable, I think.
Yeah. More so than I think most of them. I think we've always, especially on this show, we've always been like, well, what if Prophet plays Iari?
Right.
Like, this
one...
I just
think for a lot of teams, it's not necessary. You have, like, somebody like Violet or Shu.
Yeah.
If they were put on DPS and given, like, 6 months, they'd be just as good as half DPS players.
They'd start over a lot of people.
Yeah, so it's like that. They have, like, that killer instinct, you know? So it's like, I don't think the transition is going to be hard at all.
You know what? I might be eating crow and once I ask, but you might be losing big is... maybe not. I'm not sure how Infernal would adapt.
Well, you don't have a comfortable flex, though. You don't have comfortable flex, necessarily.
Yeah,
how good is Fixer?
Fixer has pretty good, or... really good mechanics, but is it enough? That's a good question. Are you once again playing Poco? Just like
not seriously. And that's a team that always feels like their team play, to kind of like cite Spilo here. Like, I will forever be stained from that opener versus the Dynasty where I watched a team actually poop their pants on stage. And that one was like, that's a tough one to like fight away. Like, that's a demon they have to like expunge in some sense. Like, it's, if you can get them comfortable in this month time, I think they'll be okay. But if APAC looks a little undecided in terms of what the meta looks like, Infernal could... I don't hate that take. I don't hate it.
I think MN3 and SKU get a lot of like the press for that team's success, but I think they're actually a lot more reliant on MAG than they are on almost anybody else.
Sure.
Yep. I think MAG was, in my opinion, the best APAC tank this past first stage. On Ryan, Ram, and Winston. So, you know, if this shifts towards a lot more up in the air, I mean, there's still Orisa. We still, I'm sure, are going to see some Ryan here and there as well. Who knows where the meta is going to shake down? But all I'm saying is that, like, if Flex Tank gets to be more valuable, your stocks are a little down.
Also, if Rush is playable, dude, we might be back on in Hanbin, you know.
Yeah, Dallas. Dallas is a sleeper. They could get something done. They're gonna have to figure something out because they can't just spam Queen forever. And they've got options, right? If you've got Doomfist, you've got D.Va running around. Like,
all of that is just like hand in Kingdom, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. He should be able to play the field as long as it stays the field. Especially I'm not gonna ask you for sources, but like I'm guessing a lot of the insights that you gather were probably NA focused.
Yes,
APAC might be completely looking the other way. They might still be on Winston. Who knows?
Yeah, I should put my feelers out what they're going down there. But like also Spark, they might lose as well, right?
If you can't put Gush on Winston, I'm always wondering. That's another like Fearless esque player, but
I always forget about Pineapple.
Yeah, yeah. Now support player, right? Memory search?
Yeah. Yeah.
Never got enough credit, man. Homie's kind of cracked.
I mean, surely if we have any sort of poking shot, it's a classic with Spark. It's like, hey, surely that they should, and sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. So
yeah, that is the truth. It's you. They're the coin flip team.
Yeah,
I think Kenobi's beaten me over the head with that term enough that I'm like, yeah, I think
it's like APAC Circle of Suck, but you could just condense it down to one team at Spark.
Yeah.
You can never tell what you're going to get.
No, ever. Forever. Since their inauguration in 2019, you really never know what Spark's going to show up that day or that season. So, all right, Spilo, thank you so much for coming and talking all kinds of big brain stuff, breaking down Iari. Correcting my even pronunciation. Spoilers.
Yeah, that's right.
any content coming out for you that you want to plug? Shout out? Any?
No, particularly just still doing stuff on YouTube, private coaching, all that jazz. But yeah, hopefully the internet speed is going to be situated so I can actually stream for once. But yeah,
there we go.
Nothing crazy.
Anywhere? Is there any kind of like website that we should go to if we want like private coaching? Anything to plug there?
CoachSpilo.com.
So okay.
CoachSpilo.com. I got a fancy new website that should be working.
Ooh, very good.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Beautiful, beautiful. Again, thank you so much, Yiska.
Yeah.
Anything coming out for you?
I mean, I'm sort of preparing for Gamescom. If you're mutual and you're going to Gamescom as well, and maybe you even need some, local information, or because I'm relatively local, just the next town over, or you need any language to, translations or whatever, I'm happy to help there. But otherwise, like in terms of Overwatch content, yeah, I'm definitely jumping on the horse again, once again, trying to get interviews done. And then I'm also cooking on one feature idea right now.
Interesting. Very good. I always love a Yiska feature. All right. That's going to be 3:10. I've got a gate to bald. See you next week. Goodbye.